Welcome to Today on Broadway for Friday, September 16th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Stars James Marino.
Congratulations to everybody over at the American Airlines Theater, where last night the Roundabout Theater Company's revival of The Cherry Orchard, which has more stars than Dancing with the Stars, which is not a stretch these days. But congratulations to them. They began performances last night for their previews. It has so many people that I am a fan of. First and foremost, Celia Keenan-Bolger, but John Glover, Harold Perrineau, Joel Grey, Chuck Cooper, the incomparable Diane Lane. I think this is going to be a really, really special production, and I'm looking forward to seeing what all the critics like you, James, and Peter, and Michael think about it when you get to see it here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it myself. So first up in the news, we have breaking news that Something Rotten is going to end its Broadway run this winter.
Yeah, James, this is one that we've kind of been speculating about ad nauseum for, you know, I originally thought weeks, but it's actually been months, going back to when Frozen announced its Broadway intentions back in the early spring. But last night, Kevin McCallum announced that the Tony-winning musical Something Rotten will close on January 1st of 2017 after nearly 22 months at Broadway's St. James Theater. The show will launch a national tour just 2.5 weeks later out in Boston. And echoing what he told Patrick on the Theater People podcast, McCallum told the Associated Press, quote, "I think it's a show that people will come to learn about and hopefully, like other shows like Chicago, as it gets older, it gets more popular. It's a title that we're still building into a brand." In discussing the decision to close, McCallum said, "Broadway, the economics are tough. Real estate is expensive. Advertising is expensive. Tickets are expensive. A lot of the economics are built on full price tickets, but yet most of these shows have to survive at less than full prices, and that's why we're seeing so much turnover right now. And it does seem like we're seeing another show announced closing pretty much every day or every other day." Now, James, this brings me to the burning question that initially popped into my mind when I heard this, and I think it popped into your mind because you're the one who told me about it, and you pretty much said something similar. But what is Jordan Roth going to do with the St. James until Frozen is ready to come in? Last we heard, Frozen was slated to make its world premiere at the Denver Center for the Performing Arts next summer before coming to Broadway in the spring of 2018. However, that was before director Alex Timbers was let go from the project, and Stephen Daldry was reportedly, but not yet confirmedly, is that a word, hired to replace him. So, James, we've seen the blueprints, so we know that Jude Jamson is moving forward with the Frozen mandated or required renovations to the St. James Theater. So does Jordan Roth push Disney to skip Denver, which I checked has not yet started selling individual tickets for the show? Or, I mean, surely they don't keep the theater dark for a year plus. So do they bring in a few limited runs, or do they roll the dice with an open-ended run and tempt fate that it turns into a hit and they have to either move that one or tell Frozen to find another theater?
Hard to say, but there's a few things at play here. First of all, is that if Jude Jamson took its 5 theaters and closed them and never had another show and never sold another ticket, it would not affect Jordan Roth's life. He doesn't need to make money.
Fair. But he wants the company to be successful.
Oh, you know, absolutely. And he's an amazing person, an amazing theatrical impresario as well. It's no doubting that. I'm saying that, you know, they don't have that pressing need to keep it going. So maybe they keep it dark. Maybe the construction is much more complex than we're thinking. Maybe it becomes the home of Broadway Radio for the next year. Who knows? I'm happy to, you know, broadcast from the St. James for the next year and build a podcast network there. You know, while they're building around us, certainly it can't be any louder than planes landing and helicopters hovering. So
now, I did think about perhaps they expanded the renovations to maybe include, you know, some other things they might have on their wish list. But that's still, I mean, if Something Rotten closes on January 1st, you know, I guess they could bring Frozen in a year. But if they're going to go to Denver and do the show next summer, I'm assuming they've built in that 7, 8, 9 months before, you know, the spring, before Tony season really starts, to tinker with the show like they did with Aladdin, who had multiple out-of-town tryouts before it got ready to come to Broadway. So I don't I mean, that's a long time to keep a theater dark, especially when you have theater employees that count on having, you know, something to do and to pay the bills.
So we're talking about a January 1st close for Rotten and then some renovations and things like that. So maybe it's not as far off as we think to give it 12 months or maybe 6 months as that, you know, that Hamilton show did open up with July, was it?
It did open in July, but that was coming off of an off-Broadway run at the Public, where if Frozen was going to open in July of 2017, that means it would have to skip its Denver production, so it would have no out-of-town trial. So it just seems to me like they're going to have to put something else in there before Frozen comes in. I think the big gamble will be whether or not it's some limited runs or if it's something open-ended. St. James is a big house, so that's a tough place for plays to be, which is what the vast majority of limited runs are on Broadway these days. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Jordan and Jujamson plays this.
Well, the Broadway Radio Network would happily fill that for them. All right.
If you could get me an apartment in the St. James, I would move to New York.
Oh, yeah, you would see Birdman. There's plenty of apartments upstairs.
That's true. Absolutely. I love that movie.
All right. Next up in the news, one show closes at the Schoenfeld, another show opens.
Yeah, speaking of shows opening and closing, yesterday morning we learned that after weeks of extreme speculation, Come From Away would officially open at Broadway's Schoenfeld Theater on March 12th of 2017 after previews begin on February 18th. Now, what's odd about that announcement is that the Schoenfeld's current tenant, the Tony-winning play The Humans, had yet to announce that it was in fact closing. Now, after the play transferred from the Helen Hayes, it never billed itself as an open-ended run. It just said it was an extended limited run, and they never started selling tickets beyond January 15th. But it seemed to me, James, at least like a breach of etiquette to announce Come From Away was moving in before The Humans had even decided to move out. So, needless to say, later in the day yesterday, it was confirmed that Stephen Karam's play would in fact close on January 15th, which was pretty obvious at that point, just a few days short of a full year on Broadway. James, I know Kevin McCollum just told us that Broadway's tough, but I can't think of another situation when a show announced its imminent opening in a Broadway theater that had a currently running show that hadn't announced its closing.
Oh, I wish we could get Peter Felicia on the phone.
Well, he would know.
He would know, but I can't think of anything. I think you're correct there. And certainly sometimes these announcements get ahead of each other. You know, there's definitely a way in which to do this.
Yeah, this was weird. And I don't know enough about who's producing what shows, so I don't know what's going on there. But I know for a fact that the Come From Away announcement was not like a split second decision to send out a press release. It was something that had been embargoed for more than 12 to 15 hours. So this was something that if they wanted to get in front of it, they could have let the producers of The Humans know, hey, this is coming. You might want to announce before we announce. And that didn't happen. So I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but it seemed weird to me. It seemed odd. And it seemed a little, it made me a little uncomfortable.
Well, sometimes people hire journalists who don't write so fast. So maybe it was really supposed to be, but never happened. Next up in the news, a few theater greats to be honored with National Medal of Arts.
Yeah, on Wednesday, it was announced that President Obama would present the National Medal of Arts to a number of major stars with theatrical connections. Chief amongst them is Her Royal Highness Audra McDonald, who will be joined in the honor by Mel Brooks, Morgan Freeman, Philip Glass, Berry Gordy, playwright and actor Luis Valdez, dancer and choreographer Ralph Lemon, and the one that really made me the most happy, the Tectonic Theater Company's Moises Kaufman. The recipients will receive their medals at a September 22nd ceremony at the White House, with First Lady Michelle Obama in attendance, which in my mind is an honor and a prize in and of itself to be in her company. In the past 10 years, theatrical artists to receive the honor have been kind of limited. John Kander, Bill T. Jones, Brooklyn Academy of Music, Tony Kushner, Al Pacino and Meryl Streep, if you stretch it, Rita Moreno, the Sherman Brothers and Sid Charisse. Those were the only ones that really had theatrical connections that I could pick up on. But as I said a minute ago, I'm super excited that Moises Kaufman is getting honored. He is such a unique and vital voice in the theatrical community that to see him getting some, you know, widespread publicity, not that this is going to be leading the evening news with Lester Holt, but this makes me happy that Moises is getting this honor.
Absolutely, and I dare to say that it's actually many, many years overdue.
Fair, very fair point.
All right, next up in the news, Andrew Lloyd Webber to launch a theatrical licensing company next month.
Yeah, okay, James, I'm going to need your help with this story because I understand it on the surface level. I get all of the words, but I have a lot of questions from the business perspective about this. So yesterday, Variety's Gordon Cox exclusively reported that next month, Andrew Lloyd Webber's Really Useful Group would officially be partnering with recorded music and publishing company Concord Bicycle Music to launch the musical company. According to Cox, the venture aims to provide musical theater creators with services in professional and amateur licensing, music publishing, and original cast recordings. Cox also reports that the company has secured the worldwide rights to professional and amateur performances of Lloyd Webber's entire catalog, which I will be getting back to here in a second. The Really Useful Group's managing director, Max Alexander, told Variety, "Our ambition is to take this repertoire," meaning Andrew Lloyd Webber's, "and more actively license and sell it. And once we've built a machine for doing that, we can create and manage other repertoires." So first, James, before that repertoire thing, to me, this reads like they want to do more than the MTIs and Tams Whitmarks of the world. They want to help musical theater writers establish a brand for their shows with cast recordings and publishing rights. And obviously that goes along with like things like sheet music, in addition to just the licensing that MTI and Tams Whitmark normally does. Is that what you're understanding from this as well?
Yeah, what the words on the page say, exactly what you're saying.
So to me, it seems like what they're doing is trying to get in on the ground level of something that could grow to be much bigger. So rather than just saying, we're going to be the ones to promote your show and get schools and community theaters and regional theaters to promote it, it's almost like they want to get a little bigger piece of the proverbial puzzle or proverbial pie, right?
Ooh, pie.
Is that what the play is here?
That's what it seems like. You know what it looks like to me? It looks to me like the old studio system.
Okay, explain.
You know, when you used to, you know, you signed a contract with Warner Brothers and you did the Warner Brothers films and you wrote the Warner Brothers films and you created the music for the Warner Brothers films and you were a Warner Brothers player and you worked for the Warner Brothers team. It's like a farm system for baseball or something like that, where you belong to an ecosystem. And that's what it seems like here. I mean, so they'll hire, in essence, quote-unquote, hire writers, and the writers will write the shows and then have the shows produced and licensed and original cast recordings and the royalty structures and all, you know, in a total in-house thing. It's like a studio system without the theaters at the end of the at the end of the solution there. But but the studio system was broken up because of antitrust problems. So they've addressed that ahead of time.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that they're not going to actually be having, you know, like paying, you know, Bobby and Kristen Anderson Lopez to write a show. It's like the writers will probably submit their shows to the studio system, so to speak. But I'm interested to see how this plays out. But okay, now to my next bigger question. It brings us to the rights of ALW's shows. I am at this very second looking at the RNH site, and it still has the button that says license this show on the pages for all of Lloyd Webber's shows. I would have to think that the Really Useful Group would have had to pay a pretty penny to get out of their licensing deal with RNH, right? Especially, it seems, if this is, you know, if this report in Variety is to be believed, that RNH didn't have a whole lot of time to take down the websites.
I don't know anything here. Everything I'm going to say here is speculation.
Fair.
So please, you know, I don't know anything. When we interviewed somebody from Rodgers and Hammerstein a few weeks ago,
names omitted to protect the innocent.
He talked about the new owner of Rodgers and Hammerstein. I don't know if you remember that in the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And said that they had a strange take on the future of the business.
Dun, dun, dun.
So maybe Andrew Lloyd Webber was not happy with them. I don't know. maybe, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein as a licensing organization is going to do something different. I don't know. I don't know those things. Also, it seems as though that this was just announced and they're going to take a while to gear up and get everything going. Yeah. Plus, I'm sure that Andrew Lloyd Webber's licensing agreements with them, you know, has a beginning, middle, and end to it, where at one point or another, X number of years into the contract, they renegotiate. So yeah, maybe it's coming up within 12, 18, 24 months of it being finished. And when that current license expires, they'll transition into this new company. I don't know anything. I'm just supposing right now.
Yeah, I mean, and that's all we can really do, because as great as Gordon Cox is over at Variety, there's a lot of unanswered questions that I wish we could have asked in this article, and a lot of really important business questions that affect a lot of theater around the country and around the world that seems to be unanswered at this point. But it's interesting. I mean, it's super, super interesting. And
I just thought of something else.
Okay.
And as you and I both know, sometimes websites don't work. So maybe Rodgers and Hammerstein are trying to pull it down. It's just broken. I don't know.
That's true. That's how you eat every day, is because websites don't work and you have to fix them.
That pays the mortgage.
But, yeah, exactly. And so as we were talking about this before we went to air, I did just Google how much the Right Lord Honorable Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber is worth. And according to certain websites that track these things, he has a net worth of $1.2 billion. So, I mean, how much more does he need?
Yeah, and we were talking about this before we went live. You know, I can't imagine why he would do this unless there is some sort of overarching caretaking type of legacy thing involved here that he wants to make sure that things live on in the way in which he likes to live on, or maybe he wants to mentor young writers and help them through the process. Yeah. I don't know, but I don't feel like Andrew Lloyd Webber, you know, again, just like Jordan Roth, if Andrew Lloyd Webber never ever sold another thing in his life, he and his next three generations would be totally fine.
Yeah. No, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with doing this. I'm not casting aspersions on the man because he's wealthy.
No,
should stop. It's just interesting, you know? So it kind of took the entire theatrical world by surprise on the same day that we were taken surprise by a show announcing that it was coming to Broadway in a theater that was already occupied, and then a beloved musical was closing. It's just been a crazy, weird day.
All right. What's up in the show and casting updates?
Well, two shows that have recently started performances in New York have announced their extensions. First, the Atlantic Theater Company announced that George Brandt's new play, Marie and Rosetta, which we've talked about before, starring Keisha Lewis and Rebecca Naomi Jones, has been extended an additional 2 weeks due to popular demand following opening the previous night and positive reviews. The show will now play the Linda Gross Theater through October 16th. Similarly, yesterday, Gerard Alessandrini and producers John Friedson, Christine Petty, and David Zippel announced that their parody musical Spamilton has extended a second time at New York's Triad. This time, it will be playing through New Year's Eve. The show began performances on July 19th, originally as just an 18-performance limited run. Now, James, despite the initially announced short run, Alessandrini's parodies are an institution in New York, and given Hamilton's popularity, I have to imagine that they had always planned and or hoped for this type of extension.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And from talking within the theater community with other folks who have seen it, it's a well-deserved extension.
Yeah, that's what I've heard as well. Fair point.
All right. Before we wrap up, let's talk about Joseph Gordon-Levitt says he's working on an R-rated musical with Channing Tatum.
Yeah, we've talked about rumors before that Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Channing Tatum were going to star in a big screen remake, revival, whatever you want to call it, of Guys and Dolls. That's not this. Guys and Dolls is not going to be R-rated. On Live with Kelly and Regis and Michael and Kathy Lee or whoever the hell is on that show now on Tuesday, Joseph Gordon-Levitt said that he is working on a movie musical with Channing Tatum. They've starred in three movies before, and they've both done their share of singing and dancing in films, most recently for Channing Tatum in the movie Hail Caesar. But Joseph did say that it was going to be R-rated, so not exactly the classic American musical that we are used to. So I'm excited to see what this is. They said that it will be written along with Michael Bacall, who has worked with both Gordon Levitt and Tatum in the past. So I'm all for it. I think they're both super talented and really, really funny guys. So if they're going to go make an R-rated movie musical, I assume it's also going to be very funny, and I'm all for it. I will be there reviewing it with bells on.
Hmm. I'm still waiting for a musical adaptation of Wedding Crashers and The Bridesmaids. You know, I think those would be good R-rated R-rated conversions.
Could be.
All right, Matt, why don't you get us out of here?
All right, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWW Matt, and subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. If you are doing an Emmy pool with all of your friends and coworkers, Jen and I gave you our predictions in a special episode that came out yesterday, so check it out.
And my name is James Marino of BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for finishing up the week with us. If you want to hear more, this Sunday, special guest on This Week on Broadway is Matt Tamanini. We will talk about theatrical film and television relationships, or who on television and film will be performing it. Who? What are we doing?
We're going to talk about theatrical related artists that will be appearing in new TV shows this fall, as well as some movies that are being based on some theatrical properties and some theatrical properties that are being streamed into movie theaters.
What he said. How do I end? I forget how I end.
Something about we'll talk to you on Monday or something.
Oh, yeah. All right, so listen to us on Sunday, and if not, we will talk to you on Monday.